Love in the Highlands. Chapter 1. 1876. The letter was full of warmth and affection.
"It's been a long time since we've seen you, Cousin Edward. Much too long," my dear wife says, and I agree with her.
"So do I," the Earl of Ringwood murmured, a smile spreading over his broad, kindly face. "I should like nothing better than to see my family after so long. And Scotland is very beautiful." When he thought of the splendid Highland scenery, the walls of his library seemed to crowd in on him, making him long suddenly for wide, open spaces. He loved his magnificent London home, and the life he led there. He enjoyed his place at court, his status as a trusted adviser, almost a friend, to the Queen. He also enjoyed the fact that his beloved daughter, Lavina, was the belle of the ball wherever she went. Beautiful, fashionable, elegant and superb, she made him burst with pride. She had already rejected 5 proposals of marriage, one of them from a duke. Secretly, Lord Ringwood was relieved as, since the death of his beloved wife, 4 years earlier, Lavina, his only child, was all he had to love. Their life was here in the centre of glittering society, and they would not change it for the world. Any yet, something about the letter he was reading, with its hint of heather and rivers, mountains and lakes, brought a wistful look to Lord Ringwood's face.
"Of course I know that Scotland is a long way from London," wrote his cousin Ian,
"and you have your duties in attendance on Her Majesty. But I live and hope that one day, you and Lavina, who must be grown up by now, will give us the pleasure of a visit."
"It's about time we did," Lord Ringwood agreed,
taking up his pen to reply. But in the same moment, the door opened, and his butler announced,
"The Duke of Bradwell to see you, my lord."
Lord Ringwood rose to greet his visitor, delighted, for this was his oldest friend.
"Hello, Bertram," he said. "This is an unexpected pleasure."
The Duke was a tall, elderly man with an upright carriage. Despite his white hair, he had an air of health and vigour, but now his face was troubled.
"I came to give you an urgent warning," he said without preamble.
"It must be really urgent to bring you here at this hour," the Earl observed genially.
"I know you hate getting up so early."
"I do," agreed the Duke. "But there's trouble ahead. And the sooner you know, the sooner you can act. I would have come last night, but I had a dinner party that I could not miss."
"Sit down," the Duke said,
"and tell me the worst." His easy tone showed that he did not believe that things could really be so bad. There was a pause before the Duke began. "I was at Windsor Castle yesterday evening, in attendance on the Queen. After supper we all moved, as usual, into Her Majesty's private room. I expected to discuss the local news, and was prepared to be bored, when a messenger arrived with an urgent letter for her. She read it through, then she said unexpectedly in a sharp voice, 'Another letter asking me to provide a wife for a Balkan prince whose country is being threatened by the Russians. I've said many times I cannot do any more for the Balkans. I have, as you know only too well, provided many English brides to give them alliances with this country.'
'True enough,' the Earl observed. 'Who is it this time?'
'Prince Stanislaus of Kudratz. It's a small place, but significant. Herzegovina on one side, Albania on the other. Now they've got Russia breathing down their necks, and they expect the Queen to produce a bride, as she has done many times before. Well, it's not for nothing that they call Her Majesty the Matchmaker of Europe,' observed the Earl.
He smiled as he spoke. But the Duke said, 'You won't smile, old fellow, when I tell you what the Queen has in mind now. Did you know that her great-grandmother was connected with your family?'
'That? Good heavens, that was generations ago. We've certainly never preened ourselves on our connection with royalty.'